and welcome to a very special edition of the Sports Pro podcast. I am coming from above the main networking area at Sports Pro Live 2024 at the Kia Oval. I am joined by Sam Karp. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Tom.
And Sports Pro Editorial Director Michael Long. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Tom.
What we're going to hear very shortly is Sam's conversation with Nicky Doucette, who is the CEO of NewCo, the newly formed company which is taking over running of the Women's Super League, which is a very kind of interesting and big storyline dominating the UK sports industry landscape right now. And then after that, we'll come back and have a little chat about the session. So let's take it away, Sam and Nicky.
So Nicky, welcome. We'll get straight into it. You know, why did you want to be the chief executive of this new company?
To me, I just think this is the most exciting job in sport at the moment. I'm from Canada. I grew up playing what I called soccer at the time. It was the first sport I played when I was five. It served me well my whole life. I've played football now all over the world in pickup games. That's how I met people when I moved to New York, when I backpacked in South America. And I think just always wanting to be that kid that wanted to play a professional sport. So I think having this opportunity now, coupled with, I think, the background that I've had in my career, I just see this as just such an incredible opportunity. We're at a stage now where it's not just a moment, it's a movement. And I think there's nothing more exciting than that.
You were at Nike before. Your background isn't strictly in football. You've held roles in investment banking as well, including with City. What sort of skill sets have you developed in those industries that you think you can apply here? You know, what sort of different perspectives can you bring that are going to help the WSL and the Women's Championship grow?
Well, I think from a banking perspective, one is understanding a business, but also stakeholder management. So I worked in two big complex organizations, and this equally, there's a lot of stakeholders in this particular role. So I think that experience is really helpful. But I think what I took from a Nike perspective is, at that time, is the obsession of the athlete and the obsession of the consumer. So I think in this case, any plan that I've ever seen that worked really well didn't come from what I particularly thought or what I think the team thought. It was an actual insight from the market, from the consumer, from the athlete. And I think the opportunity we have here is this is a different sport. It's the same sport, but it's women's football, and there's differences to it. It's a new audience. It's a different audience. And I think we're learning what that audience looks like. And I think the biggest thing that we can do here and the opportunity with the new co, but also from a club's perspective and also anybody working in women's football at the moment, is taking and learning and understanding, I think, this fan base more so than we've ever understood it. I think in some ways, in the past few years, it's been a proof of concept. So I think the investment that's happened, you know, across the clubs, across the FA, across everybody who's worked within it, trying to prove that it's just as good as men's football. And I think what we've discovered is actually it's a whole different sport. It's a different product. I'm trying not to use the word product. I've got some good feedback from supporters, but sometimes my corporate speak comes out. So I'm listening too. But I think there is differences. At the moment, I think it's the best way to describe it. It's a feeling. So the feeling of going to Emirates in the sold out Emirates with Arsenal women's versus a sold out Emirates for men's, they're two different feelings. One's not better than the other. They're just different. And so it depends what you're looking for as a fan, as a supporter, how you want to come into it. And it's our opportunity, I think, to obsess what problems we're ultimately trying to solve for them. The one thing I know about sport is that you want to have household names, you want to have rivalries, and you want to have games that matter, that have consequence. And if we're obsessing that and delivering that and making it as easy as possible for the fans to find that, that is ultimately what will determine long-term success.
You mentioned the stakeholder management side of things. What have those stakeholders been telling you in your first 6 months in the role? You know, are they aligned?
I think one of the reasons we've had some success over the past year is that we started holistically with a mindset shift. And we didn't start with the how or a number or this is what we need to get to. To me, that's an outcome if you're setting up the right strategy. We started first and foremost with the mindset shift in that you have to look at this through the lens of women's football. We said in some ways it's a marketing problem and not a manufacturing problem. So you can't just cut your way to profitability here. We have to invest ahead of revenue. to build something that'll be bigger in the future. And I think the thing with all our stakeholders is I think they've bought into that concept. And to me, that's also the most exciting thing too.
Let's move the conversation on to NewCo specifically then. The women's professional game in England has been run by the Football Association for more than decades. But, you know, why does now feel like the right time to be splitting from the governing body to form an independent company? You know, what gives you the confidence that the WSL and Women's Championship are ready to stand on their own 2 feet?
Yeah, I think it's just the right time. Again, going back to, I think the investment from the FA to get it to this point has been absolutely amazing. I think the investment from all of the clubs to get it to this point too. But I think we're now moving into the next stage of professionalization. So I think the NewCo, so there will be a new name at some point, and it might take a bit of time because actually I think the name's actually really important. And also what we're doing right now is defining what the values of the new company truly are so that we can articulate them and be transparent from a public perspective. But if we can define that properly, that'll also enable what behaviors are associated with that. And so moving into the new company, which will be owned by the clubs, allows us to have, you know, 100% dedicated management team thinking about this 24/7. Well, hopefully not. We have some work-life balance, but, you know, we wake up every single day and that's all we think about. So it's not one part of the job. It is the job. And I think, you know, when you're starting to have a team that understands, that has the experience across the various functions, that are making good decisions based on the right insights, the right data, we're setting up the right practices, we're learning and sharing and being more transparent, I think, with all of the clubs as well. And they are with each other, which is, I also think, slightly different from a men's football perspective. You know, we're at the stage now where we have to sell women's football. I don't think you have to sell men's football in the same way. And we're all learning what that looks like. You know, there's different examples of who's been slightly more successful and who's still learning, but we're all sharing what the best learnings are.
You mentioned there that you're looking at a lot of data and insights at the moment. What's some of that data telling you, I suppose? You know, what does the WSL fan look like today?
Well, we've just done some fan insights work for the first time. So we're kind of digesting all of the data that we've received or the insights that we've received. And it's just fascinating. It's so much to digest. But the complexity, actually, of the fan is fascinating. And so on one end, I think you have a core fan who, you know, lives and breathes and is the season ticket holder, knows where to find it. I think you have a fan in the middle that's probably come in through men's football that is looking at it at the moment or has a daughter and wants more of a family feel. And then I think you have a new fan that's come in through the Lionesses that is untethered to the men's fan or men's football and is open to all kinds of possibilities. But of those three buckets at the moment and understanding their relationship to football, except for the fan that's come in through the Lionesses, everyone else has come in through men's football. And so even if you are a core fan, you probably came in through your family because your father or your grandfather or your grandmother was a fan of a particular club. And so you know the behaviors of men's football. And it's interesting because I think, does that apply directly to women's football as it keeps growing? Otherwise, what is distinct about women's football? It's our job, I think, to start to articulate that more in how it comes to life from a visual perspective and the language that we use. So that's very clear why it is distinctive and invite more people into it.
You mentioned that one of the things you're going through now is kind of defining the values of NewCo as well. What are sort of some of the other things that need to happen between now and the start of next season for NewCo to be in a position to take over the running of the WSL and Women's Championship?
Well, the biggest thing that has to happen is we're in the middle of the legal transition. So that'll transition the company itself from the FA to being owned by the club. So that is the biggest thing that has to happen that's going on in the background. The other thing I think is just understanding what our mission is. So all the clubs and I think all of our stakeholders have signed up to the mission for the new company, which is to build the most distinctive, competitive, and entertaining women's football club competition in the world for the players of the fans of today and tomorrow. But to me, those three words are actually really important. So distinctive, I've said it before, I think for any brand to cut through has to have distinction, and we need to continue to articulate and define what that is. Competitive, it has to be a competitive sport. That's why fans want to watch it. Entertaining to me is the storytelling and the emotion. Are we telling all the right stories? Do we have the right visibility? Are the fans able to find it and connect? Because I think one of the interesting things about our game is the players and their relationship with the fans, which I think is slightly different. There's a closeness there that as we grow, we have to figure out, you know, how we maintain that. But to me, that's the most exciting thing. I think the more we understand that, the more we buy into that particular mission, we'll build the strategy to bring it to life.
You mentioned the legal transition there. We're confident that will happen in time, right? In time for next season?
Very confident.
Great. One big piece of business that has been confirmed is that you're rolling over your existing domestic broadcast deal with Sky Sports and the BBC. That partnership started from the 2021-22 season and has delivered significant increases in viewership for the WSL across both of those platforms. It was obviously due to expire at the end of this season, and a lot of people were predicting a bumper deal because of some of those factors I mentioned about viewership, interest, and the general trajectory of the leagues. So can you kind of shed a little bit of light about why the current agreement has been rolled over for that additional year?
Yeah, I think we feel really excited about that. I think we're still in a transition into the new company. I think the rollover is the right thing to do strategically. I think we have great partners in BBC and in Sky, so we're really excited that they've done that with us. I think, again, we go back to the fan insights. I think the viewership data, I think we're still learning a lot about that, and in this transition period, how that comes to life and what we're doing in the right way. And the other thing is, I think through, you know, one of the values and how we articulate that of the company, I think, going forward is one of partnership and collaboration. And that includes with Premier League and with EFL. So when I think about scheduling opportunities in the future, shared stadiums, what that looks like, I think we're still working through how that comes to life and how we can better articulate that together. So I think, again, we're just in the transition. So I think it's been a great rollover for the company.
Sure. And I mean, with that additional time that you've given yourselves, you know, what are going to be your priorities when you take those rights to market again?
The priorities, again, I think understanding the fans and what content and how they want to watch it, making it as easy as possible for them to watch matches. I think the scheduling is something we need to continue to be as thoughtful as possible so that we have as best a consistent scheduling so it's easy for fans to watch and that it works in the broader ecosystem that we all live in and work in. So I'd say those are the two big things.
Sure. And I suppose the outcome of those broadcast negotiations have potentially focused your mind a little bit on other revenue streams you already have and potentially new ones that you can look to unlock both at the league and the club level. What areas within the league, within your clubs, have you started to identify as opportunities for investment? Perhaps areas where, you know, you might be able to make improvements quickly across all the teams, you know, whether that's on things like digital, whether it's ticketing, facility improvements, you know, what areas are you looking at the moment where you can make improvements quickly?
Everything. And that's, again, why it's so exciting, because I think in some ways we have a blank slate, even though everyone has invested so far where we are today. We're still at the time where we can make changes, we can make investment. When I look at the growth rates and I look at what's happened over the past 3 or 4 years, every metric is up. So whether you're looking at from a competitive perspective or quality on the pitch, the number of nationalities in our league, viewership, engagement, social following, engagement, athlete following, athlete engagement, everything is pointing up. And so despite it actually being hard to find still, I mean, I watched the evening news on Sunday and they went through all the men's fixtures and then they didn't go through the women's fixtures. You know, there's a Champions League, you know, one of the best matches where Barcelona lost for the first time ever since 2019. And like there was very little visibility on it over the weekend. So despite it still being really hard to find, despite it fans not knowing exactly which stadium it might be in or the timing, they're still showing up. There's a really strong fan base there that I think we just need to nurture much more and make it much easier. And I think the monetization opportunities off the back of that are great. I mean, we're going to hit cumulative 1 million in seasonal attendance for the first time ever. So again, that just continues to grow.
And then you've talked about wanting a competitive league as well. How important is it that the investment that's coming in, the investments that are being made, as you know, felt not only across the WSL and the Women's Championship, but also further down the pyramid as well? You know, we've seen in the men's game a widening gap between the haves and the have-nots. In the Premier League in particular, there's a certain group of clubs who have a lot more money than everyone else. Presumably you're keen at Nuco to prevent that situation from manifesting itself.
Again, we're part of a broader ecosystem. I think from a Nuco perspective, the role of the company is the top two divisions and making sure those are financially sustainable and as successful as possible that ultimately can then invest back down the pyramid. I think the women's pyramid is different than the men's game. We need more investment down in the pyramid. And at times it's really tricky because it's chicken and egg. Ultimately, we need more investment across everything to allow the opportunities for more girls to want to play. All of participation numbers are up. And so again, it's offering more opportunities, but to me, it's actually the concept of like equitable opportunity is really important. So if I was to ask all of you to close your eyes, if I was to tell you a story about a Champions League game or Chelsea versus Arsenal or any great football match, and then I was to ask you to visualize those players on the pitch, majority of you, if not all of you, would imagine those players to be male. So the word football itself, the unconscious bias of that means men's football. And so as we think about the language, as we think about creating equitable opportunities, because women's football is starting behind, we're at startup, but with 100 years of history of men's football, creating equitable opportunities is how we can drive more value. So to me, I think I heard someone talked about the NCAA and Caitlin Clark in that example. To me, the interesting thing about that example is, yes, there's an amazing, you know, generational star in Caitlin Clark, but to me, the success of this season happened 3 or 4 years ago. So there is another female player who called out inequalities to the NCAA that the women's teams didn't have the same weight room as the men's team. So the NCAA actually did a review and they rebranded it. They rebranded it to be Men's March Madness and Women's March Madness. So before it was just March Madness and Women's March Madness. But when you qualify it and put men's and women's in front of it, all of a sudden you're creating an equitable opportunity for both of them to have equal value. And to me, that's the opportunity. So when you think about the World Cup or the Women's World Cup, you know, one is inherently worth more than the other. But if it was the Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup, you have opportunities for it to potentially be equal value. But going back to the NCAA example, the men's Final Four was still successful. Just because the women's Final Four had more viewers didn't mean the men's didn't. They are equally successful. This is not about taking market share. This is about making the pie much bigger. But it starts, to me, also with the equitable opportunities and the language that we use, how we question it, first team versus women's team. All of that becomes really important to drive value.
And what would those equitable opportunities look like in English football? You know, would it be playing in the same stadiums? Would it be more on the scheduling side of things? What would that look like here?
Yeah, I think equitable opportunities to drive match day attendance to which stadiums, and then the equitable opportunity to build that fan base. Again, how long has the women's team had to build their fan base? What does success look like? Testing, learning, hopefully failing fast, fail cheaply, move forward, keep going. Equitable opportunities around scheduling. You know, do we have opportunities to create a more consistent slot going forward? Equitable opportunities in the media and visibility of the women's game. Equitable opportunities within the clubs for investment, for language, for, you know, if a women's team has won an FA Cup, why isn't their picture also beside the men's team? You know, how we show up around everybody. Or if you said on the weekend, oh, did you go to the game? Well, which game? Is it the men's game or the women's game? All of that just normalizes the opportunities for it to become as big as it possibly can.
We're talking a lot about growing the WSL and further developing the game here in England, but it's probably worth pointing out that the WSL alongside leagues like the NWSL is probably considered among the leading in the world already in terms of revenue and some of the talent on the pitch. What's kind of your view on the general health of the club game globally at the moment, and where do you see the WSL's position within that?
I think we're positioned really well. I think we have good relationships with the NWSL at the moment. At this point, the whole tide should rise. I think we all are working together to help each other. So we have a good relationship with the NWSL at the moment. And I think they're doing great. Equally, I think our league is very well positioned in this market. Again, the markets are different. And so how we come to life here, I think, is slightly different than in the US. But again, I think this concept of partnership, of collaboration, of how we help each other grow, of how we help each other learn, I think is really important. A great example was this past weekend when you have Arsenal and Chelsea helping each other try and sell tickets. So I think things like that that's how we move this forward. None of us have all the answers at the moment. I think how we can share, how we can be transparent in the right way and help each other grow is something I think that's unique, but also really important.
On the panel before this, we heard from Victoire from Mercury 13, as you mentioned as well. She's been quite vocal previously in her calls for greater independence in the women's game, including on the club side, as well as at league level. Obviously, we've spoken about the NWSL as well, and a big difference there is that a lot of the clubs in that league are independent, and we've seen massive valuations attached to those teams. Some takeovers happened recently worth tens of millions of dollars. You know, obviously, the WSL and Championship are now going to be owned by an independent company, but most of the clubs within that are tied to a men's team. Do you think we'll eventually see a time, or do we need to see a time eventually, where there is more independence on the club side in this country as well as at league level, in order to attract that new investment and for the game to continue to develop?
Well, we have independence in the Championship at the moment. I think at the end of the day, if we're defining what's a professional environment look like and what's the investment required to deliver that also for the athletes, I think the opportunities are there. I think one of the athletes said it to me is like, how can a fan or a consumer love a product if the owner doesn't love the product? And I just think that works across so many different sectors, if not everyone. And that's the point. I think it's clear who loves it and who is showing up and who doesn't. But I think to be a professional environment requires investment at the moment. But I don't think just being part of a men's team means that defines success. At the moment, they're the best resource. But I think there's a great example with London City and Michelle Kane coming in, which to me feels really exciting, because I also think that's a differentiator for our league. And I think they will also push going forward, because she'll have a different point of view. And that's exciting to bring that to the table.
Do you think there's an onus on those owners of the men's clubs then to up their investment, to continue investing, particularly when we're at a stage where there's a regulator coming in, there's the potentially for the women's side to maybe be deprioritized? You know, would you call on your owners to continue investing and not be deterred by that?
I think we just need to continue to show that this is an investable proposition, that there's a clear strategy, which I think over the past year, I think the clubs are starting to see that, which is why they want to continue to invest. And I think the more we can deliver that, point to that, show what is possible, I think there's never been more clubs now that want to invest in women's football in this country. And so I think that's really exciting. And you'll see which strategies will ultimately be more successful than others. And again, you'll have the innovation curve where you'll have, you know, some who are really, you know, pushing it forward and then seeing what's working. And then others will try to copy that and then the rest will come on board. So again, I think for us, we need to deliver and show this is an investable proposition, but it's not, you know, this is a long-term investment. This is long-term capital that is coming in.
I've got a couple more questions, but I just want to turn to some of the questions coming in from our audience. There's one here, if we can bring it up, about what the most important platforms to build fandom for the WSL are, you know, broadcast versus digital, or is it a combination of those, do you think?
I think we're still figuring out exactly what the strategy is. So that work's ongoing in the background. Broadcast and digital are both important. When you look at, I think, how the men's game has been built and their fandom was built back in the day, it started on a free-to-air proposition. And then obviously the pay TV is coming in and that's driving a lot of the financial success of the men's game. I think where we are on the women's game right now, we need to be really thoughtful around reach versus revenue and what that looks like. But ultimately, we need to make it as easy as possible for fans to watch, and that there's a product on the pitch, that there's great football, that there's great athletes and people know their stories better. And then people want to watch it more.
I think we both predicted we might get a question about the broadcast deal. You mentioned scheduling is a big area of concern for the next deal. Obviously, there were reports about playing during the Saturday blackout period. Is that an option you've considered or are considering?
I think we're considering all options. We're part of the broader football ecosystem, so I think it's really important. We share stadiums as well, obviously, with the men's game, both in Premier League and EFL. So I think just having really strong partnerships there from a scheduling perspective and maximizing where the moments are, where the women's game can have as much visibility as possible. And so I think that's ongoing in the background. And to me, that's really positive.
Just a couple more questions from me. I'm sure most people in this room aren't necessarily expecting to see a drastic change from next season. But, you know, at what point do you think we'll start to see the impact of Nuko truly being felt in the WSL and Championship?
You have to wait and see.
And how are you going to measure that growth?
How we measure it? Competitiveness in the league, awareness, and are we getting visibility, attendance? And I think those three are the three big things. And then if we're doing that, ultimately revenue should come off the back of that.
Dawn Airy, who is the chair of the WSL, I can see you smiling because I think you remember what she said when she was sat where you are
I do.
At this time last year. She said that the WSL can be a £1 billion league within a decade, which I'm sure you'll thank her for later. Mm-hmm. From what you've seen and, you know, based on your first few months in the role, is that a forecast you'd agree with today?
Funny, I love Dawn. So when I worked in banking and we would work with some public companies around what guidance you should get, I was always like, no guidance. So I would probably say no, I would never put a number out there again because I don't think it's about the number. Again, I think it's about understanding the fans, the athletes, the clubs, you know, the managers, the referees. How are we investing from that? Are we creating the best football experience, the best football competition? If we're doing that, we'll drive value. The value could be bigger than that. It could be smaller than that. I think every company that I've been involved in that put a big number out there publicly, and I was in Nike when they did that, you made different decisions off the back of that. So yeah, the big numbers are great, I think, to show the ambition, which is what I think Dawn was trying to do last year. And we are ambitious. We have huge ambition. But to me, again, it goes back to, are we delivering what fans want to see? Are we creating and building a league that the best athletes in the world want to come play here?
Sure. And we're not putting a number on it then. What's the overwhelming message that you want everyone to, I guess, leave this room thinking about when they think of the future of women's football?
That football means women's football too. And that I think, you know, this concept of equitable opportunities, because I think that is where we all in this room have opportunities, I think, to drive change and to ask those questions and just to be conscious of the language that we're using, because it's a new proposition that's coming through that has opportunity to really have incredible success.
There you have it. Nikki Doucette, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, gents, we've had a few hours to sit and marinate on our thoughts after that session. Sam, I guess you were the one leading it.
Although
we were talking before recording about how sometimes when you're having that conversation, you tend to kind of focus on the conversation itself rather than actually what's being said. Have you got any thoughts on what Nikki was saying during that session in particular?
Yeah, I was listening. What sort of did come out of it is that there's still only so much that she can say about Nuko while the company is being set up and while it's being established. Obviously, in terms of, you know, how decisions are going to be made, what the board's going to look like, all of those kind of things are still to be decided. She said as well that, you know, there's a legal transition still to go through in terms of actually setting up the company and breaking away from the FA. She did assure me and the audience in the room that it will be ready in time to take over the running of the WSL and the Women's Championship from next season. So that's good news. You know, unsurprisingly, painted a very optimistic picture about the future of women's football in this country and kind of the opportunity that's there. I think, obviously, perhaps from a news perspective, one of the more interesting things she went into was the broadcast deal, which we can perhaps go into in a minute. But I think one of the more interesting lines that I think came out of it anyway was this focus that she had on equitable opportunity. You know, if the CEO of Nuko had come from within football itself, I don't think you would have seen the CEO sat up there talking about the NCAA and making comparisons with March Madness and how they kind of leveled up that competition between the men's and the women's and some of the interest that that's driven. And she talks about wanting to do that over here in English football. So I thought that was a really interesting point that she made. How she goes about doing that is kind of another question, I think. But that was sort of one of the more interesting things that I thought came out of that session.
Yeah, I mean, she kept on talking about that equitable point. One of the bits that I picked up on from my notes was she talked about the kind of the new fan that they've got, and they had the three buckets of fans, the two that sort of they kind of know about, and I'm probably butchering this slightly, but one is the fan that's crossed over from men's football, one that's kind of coming from the Lionesses, and then there's this other new, basically this kind of completely different type of fan that they've got a chance to address, which doesn't sit really out inside any kind of current, and I guess Nikki would think of it probably from a marketing perspective, given that's where her background comes from. And that's what actually kind of struck me is like the kind of why she's in that role is that she's clearly come in And it's still a marketing job at this point, I think, women's football. Don't know, Mike, if you got the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why she's probably quite a good fit for the role. I mean, she spoke specifically about, you know, the mindset shift that is required in women's football in this country, first and foremost, or that is happening. But I think she specifically mentioned that it was a kind of marketing problem rather than a manufacturing problem. So, like, they've got the product, although she was wary of using words like product. She said she's been called out for her corporate speak and things. But ultimately, they've got the product on the field. They've got the attendances. They've got the viewership. They've got the interest. They've got that product, but it's about marketing it, articulating it in the right way. She spoke about going through that process of defining what the values are and what the league wants to be long term and things like that, and then going about communicating that in interesting ways. And I think that's the challenge or the opportunity that faces them and everyone involved. She spoke about obviously a lot of different stakeholders involved, but she gave off the sense, at least, that everyone is quite aligned on what the opportunity is. They've bought into the concept of needing to invest at various levels of the game to actually build it all up. So, yeah, I thought that was quite a nice, succinct way of putting it. It's a marketing problem, not a manufacturing problem, because we all know the product exists and how good the players are and how good it looks on the field and things like that. It's just about drawing in those fans, not just existing fans, but those new fans. And I think they're working with agencies at the moment to understand who that fan is and understanding the data so they can respond to that when they eventually do go to market fully with this kind of new setup that they're creating now, I guess.
There was also a striking change, I thought. So last year, and you mentioned this, Sam, we had Dawn Airey, who's the FA's chair of the WSL, talking about how in 10 years' time the WSL could be a £1 billion business. And Nicky Dacey was clearly much, much less willing to put a figure on things. What was your read on that?
I think you can probably look at it in two ways. You can look at it in the sense that maybe she doesn't want people holding them to that kind of timeline. She mentioned herself that when she works, you know, in other roles, you're always holding yourself to a number, a target. I think that's probably not that helpful necessarily for women's football to hold it against that timeline, because you're always going to have people measuring you against that. You have to look at it, as she spoke about, as this kind of long-term opportunity. She's spoken quite a few times about the fact that men's football, for example, has had a 100-year head start. So to sort of say we're going to grow to a billion within 10 years, it makes for a nice headline. But, you know, once you get into the numbers, how do we actually go about doing that? And then I think if you look at it from another perspective, say, why do we have to sort of restrict ourselves to that £1 billion figure? Why can't it be more than that? That kind of goes back to what we were saying before about the fact that they're still working their way through the data, figuring out who their fans are, and probably figuring out, you know, where the money is going to come from as well, how they're going to generate that revenue. I think further down the line, that's when they'll start being able to maybe internally at least put a number on it and sort of shoot for something a little bit more.
Not sure there's like too much more we can kind of go into. We've heard the whole of Sam's on stage session. I guess one thing, if we wanted to sort of wrap up here, guys, say we come back in a year's time. Our wonderful content team have decided that it's time to get Nicky to sit back on stage. It's been a big year for the WSL. Like, where do you see that organisation going based on what you heard today in a year's time?
I would be very surprised if they're rolling over their TV deal again for another year, because that wouldn't necessarily be a sign of progress. I think there were probably factors that played into that, you know, whether they went late to market, whether the new co is still in development, it's still too soon to be going into a long-term relationship and things like that with platforms in the domestic market. So, yeah, I think there's factors that played into that now, but in a year's time, expect a lot of that, you know, the legal stuff to be ironed out. There'll be more clarity around structure and strategy and, you know, what the plan is. So I think the media deal will be a big focus again in a year's time, but you'd expect that to be somewhat different to the one they've just signed, because I think that's where I think everyone, you know, all of us who cover the industry a lot would say that's where they're going to realise a lot of the financial upside of all of this interest we're seeing and all the attendances and all of the narrative around the growth of women's sport generally and women's football specifically. They're going to realise that on the media rights side, even if the model is different and things like that. Whatever they're making now shouldn't be what they're making long term. They should be making a lot more. And then that's got to filter down in the right way to every club in the league, and it's got to be shared out equally, and they've got to figure out that revenue distribution model, I guess, long term, and how that all looks. But I think they'll be sitting prettier in a year's time.
Yeah, I don't even know if that much will have changed in a year's time. But, you know, the fact that they're rolling over this broadcast deal means that, you know, unless there's investment coming from elsewhere, there's only so much they're working with in terms of what they can invest at a league level and also distribute to the clubs. I think the more interesting thing would be if Nicky were to come back in, say, 5 years' time. That would be kind of when we've maybe had, you know, we've seen we've sort of seen the fruits of what that next, whatever that next broadcast deal is. They've had an opportunity to reinvest that money. We'll also sort of have an opportunity to see how serious the clubs are about it and how serious they are about investing. Because I think one of the things that Nicky spoke about was, you know, this is kind of a partnership between the league and all the clubs as well. The fact that the clubs aren't independent from those men's sides, the onus is on them to invest as well. So in order to create that equitable opportunity that she spoke about, it kind of might even require some sacrifices on that men's side as well. So 5 years' time, I think, is maybe a point when we'll be able to say that, you know, this is where they are and this is where they sit in relation to other leagues in the women's football club landscape. I know that's not really answering your question, Tom, but I think that would probably be a fairer point at which to measure them on.
Not answering the question is generally what happens here at Sports Pro Life. So, yeah, but that's probably the best place to leave it, I think. Mike, Sam, thank you very much.
Cheers, Tom.
Thank you.